Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and great to have back Patricia McConnell to talk with you and with me about communicating with our pets. She's a certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker, and author, and I'm going to talk with her about keeping your dog active, even when it's too cold to go outside or maybe too snowy, like today in a good part of Wisconsin. And, of course, we'll take your animal behavior comments and questions as we move along. So certainly look forward to that. So, think your dog has cabin fever? What do you do to avoid it? Join in the conversation. Give a call at 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Dr. Patricia McConnell, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Larry. Fun to be here. Fun to see your kitty, by the way. The fun thing about all this remote work is I got to see your kitty. You got to see Skip in my lap.
It's one of the good things about doing our shows this way. You get to stay around your pet. But I imagine your dog and a lot of dogs may be prone to cabin fever if we don't kind of keep up with things a little bit.
You know, I think a lot of them do, but so do I. I mean, I've got a bad case of cabin fever right now. I really do. And I think it's partly, it's winter, it's the light. I mean, I love being outside. Even in winter, I love winter, but you know, there's not a lot of light and there's COVID, and we had it a little extra because my three-year-old Boracay, almost four, Skip, had to have surgery. And so he's been restricted for the last 2 weeks. So we couldn't go on walks and I couldn't work sheep. And so I was getting a really bad case of it myself. And I thought the dogs are too. So I thought, you know, there are two ways all of us can deal with it. And the one I chose was I thought of a couple of behaviors that I just need to clean up a little bit or improve or initiate. So I started working on being able to use a Dremel, which is that kind of a grinder tool that you can use to trim your dog's nails that avoids the clippers that can sometimes quick them and cause bleeding and pain, and then they're terrified to have their nails done, right? So usually Jim and I do it together. He stuffs treats into their mouths while I'm doing it. And I thought, you know, I really should just teach my dogs to be able to just hold their paws out so I can use this Dremel tool. So I actually have a video of doing it with Skip and Maggie with two different tools on my blog, The Other End of the Leash. So that's something I'm working on. So the category of sort of think of a behavior you want to improve with one of your pets. You know, what do you want to be a little bit better? So that's one thing we could do. And it's, you know, if you make it fun, you make it like a game, it's like a circus trick, right? You don't have to make it this sort of boring chore, but you're giving your dog lots of treats probably, right? They think it's great. Mm-hmm. Give you something to do. So that's one perspective. And the other is just have fun, you know, teach your dog a new silly trick. I love tricks because they have no baggage with them. You know, a lot of the quote obedience that we do is I just did finger quotes, you know, is a lot of the obedience exercises we do. They have a certain amount of baggage with them sometimes, you know, sit means sit. And, you know, why are you not respecting me when I told you to, you know, lie down and stay? And even though that baggage isn't useful, it's still, we're human and sometimes it comes in. But, you know, you teach your dog to take a bow on cue and he doesn't do it in front of your friends. And you're like, who cares? You know, we did it this morning. It's like a big deal. So there's so many tricks. I have some in a book I wrote, Play Together, Stay Together. Karen London and I wrote a book, and it has a section on some fun tricks to play. And one of my favorite, sort of a trick, sort of not, is you just teach your dog to find something that you hid in the house. And so take a favorite toy or food, can work too, and then you teach find it. So you put the object, whatever it's going to be, something the dog really wants or the cat really wants. I'm watching Larry's cat behind him, by the way. It's just so fun. Sorry, everybody can't do that, but the cat's having a ball. Larry doesn't even know it because you can't see the cat. I'm watching the cat, who's having just a great time. So find it. It's really easy to teach. You take something they really want, and you put it down pretty close to them where they can see it, and you say, find it, and then they go get it, and then you either play with a toy or you give them the treat, whatever, and then you just gradually make the toy farther and farther away, eventually out of sight, harder and harder to find. And so you can play find a toy for a long time. You know, and your dog's having a good time. He's getting mental exercise, getting physical exercise. You're having fun. So those are just a few ideas of some things you can do. You can teach take a bow. You can teach roll over, shake, high five. You know, all the fun, silly things that we can teach our dogs and cats and birds and gerbils and, you know, even teach your housemate or your partner or your spouse or your kids. Find a trick to teach them. Pick up the laundry and put it in the hamper and I'll give you a treat.
Well, let's take that find it. I love that idea. It's great. How long would it normally take to teach that?
Yeah, good question. And it, of course, as always, my answer to everything is it depends. So it depends a lot on your dog, cat, animal. It also depends on how good a job you do making sure they don't fail. So you always want to set them up to win. So I would just the first couple of days, you can get them going into another room to look for it, right? So for a couple of days, you do it in the same room, maybe even just one or two sessions, and they see it, and then they get lots of reinforcement. You play tug with the toy if you can. That's a great way to do it, by the way. Great reinforcement is to play the tug game, or they get the treat, and that's even better, right? Or, well, for some dogs, it's even better. So you could get them going into another room in just maybe two or three sessions if you make the first time in another room just inside the door. You know, they can maybe even see a tiny piece of it. But I would say if you just gradually make it harder and harder over a period of, oh gosh, five or six sessions, you could have a great find it game going.
I love it. I think that's a great, great, great idea. Well, Sean in La Crosse has a question for you about a problem that is, I think, often prevalent. Sean, hi. Thank you for calling from La Crosse.
Hello.
What hi, can Sean. We do for you?
So I have an 80-pound American Staffordshire Terrier, and he gets overly excited whenever we have company over, and he just doesn't calm down. He's always a 10 with energy, and he's jumping and pawing at these people. And one of our friend's kids was over, and he, you know, kind of jumped on him with a display of dominance. And like, it's never aggressive. It's always tenacious playing. And he's gone through training and he got his canine good citizenship, but we just can't seem to curb this over enthusiastic behavior.
Okay. What do you think, Patricia?
Larry, you are right on. This is a common problem. So it's a good one to start with, actually. And, you know, arousal and over-arousal is, as I said, a common problem. It's especially a problem in some of the bully breeds, by the way. They just, once they get excited, it's just really hard for them to calm down. So there's a management tool that I really love, and it's not, quote, fixing it in the sense of your dog is going to greet people at the door sort of with this perfectly polite sitting in the corner with a halo over their head behavior. But it's a really easy management tool. And I use it all the time. I use it with Maggie, who tends to be a little barky sometimes when people come. And I'm like a lot of border collies. I'm super sound sensitive. But I just like enough barking. So a lot of people, I've had a lot of clients find success with this. I use it. You teach your dog to go to a different place when the doorbell rings or when somebody knocks. So they go into a back room and you shut the door. They go into their crate and you shut the door. And then after the people have been there for a while, 10 or 15 or 20 minutes, very commonly the dogs calm way down. They're just not sort of overwhelmed with all this arousal and excitement. So especially an 80-pound dog, right? You know, and they can be pretty scary if they're jumping on a kid, right? Again, doesn't need to be aggressive, just could be just a little frightening and just a little rude sometimes. So I would suggest that you teach your dog when somebody knocks or the doorbell rings and you start it. If you experiment, I'll bet you'll find that if you knock on the door, ring the bell, whatever people do when they come, at the same door that people come through, if you knock on it, you just put your hand around on the outside of the door, just open the door, put your hand around and knock on it, your dog will be because they become conditioned to respond to that particular acoustic cue. So use that cue. You have control now. You don't have visitors. What you have is some treats in your hand. And that you're going to make that noise, the dog barks, and you go, oh, go to your crate, which is what I taught Maggie, so I'll just use that. Oh, go to your crate. And you run them in. You've got the treats, so you're luring them, and you throw the treats in the crate, and you shut the door. And you just leave them there for a couple seconds. You do that like 4 or 5 times in a row. That's one great session. And then gradually over time, you start to ask your dog to go themselves a little further and further towards the crate. And don't go too fast. There might take several weeks, might take 15 sessions or so to get your dog to start going towards the crate, him or herself. But once they get in there, then you reinforce them. I am a huge believer, as everybody who's ever listened to me knows, I'm a huge believer of stuffed Kongs. They're just such handy things to have. So you stuff a big Kong, it'd be a large or an extra large with an 80-pound dog, with their dinner food. Maybe you feed them kibble, you can soak it, and then I stuff them in the Kongs, and then I freeze it because it makes it last longer. And then you put them in the crate with a stuffed Kong, and they're happy in there for 10 minutes or so, getting the food out. So they learn. I love it when visitors come because I get to go in my crate, and I get to eat this great food out of this great toy. And then things calm down. You let them out. Almost always, but of course, you can never say always, right? Not with animal behavior. But most of the time, if they come out after 10, 15 minutes, they're much calmer, they're much cooler. And then you can start using your obedience exercises and all that good training that you've done, good for you, and get your dog to listen because they're not so aroused.
There you go, Sean. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Pam in Galena, Illinois, what's on your mind?
Well, I have a red-bone coonhound. She's a rescue. I think she's about 5. And we're pretty homebound right now. I don't have a fenced-in area for her. And she's very bored and lonely. She's just stuck in here with me. And the one thing that she has found to entertain herself is to shred paper. I'm allowed her to do it because it's the only thing I found when she gets, needs to blow off some energy, and she doesn't eat it, but she shreds it. I've got shredded magazines all over the house now. I just wondered if you had any other ideas for her.
I do. That's one of those. It's one of those habits where at first it's like, well, this will be okay. I've read that piece of paper, right? And then later it's like, oh no, they just read my final tax form or something. So yes, I have an idea for you because you have a red-bone coonhound, which basically means you have a nose with paws. So that's fantastic. So start playing scent games. So you could play the find it game based on scent. Just take some kind of great treat. Oh, there's Maggie barking. So just take a great treat. Oh, that's the plower. Well, that's going to be a lot of barking. So do y'all want to see how I handle Maggie barking? Yes, you will. Hang on. I'll talk as loudly as I can, and you're going to hear what I do. Maggie. That'll do. Good girl. Okay, did you hear that, Larry?
I did indeed. That was great.
Good, yeah, because the plow's here now, and Maggie would bark her head off the whole time she's here. But I use that method I talked to earlier, and Maggie is now in the crate, in the study, the room I'm in. She can't see anything, and she's quiet now, at least for now. We'll see. But I love that that happened. One of the things I love about these Zoom kind of calls is that you get to see like real life, you know, with this life with a dog trainer. This is how you handle things. I love it. So, okay, the nose with paws. So I would put that nose to work. There are all kinds of books out there. I would go to dogwise.com, and type in scent or scent games. There's several great books on scent games you can play, teaching your dogs to find something you've hidden, teaching your dog to discriminate one scent from another. A friend of mine actually taught his dog to be able to tell the difference between water that came from the hot water tap or the cold water tap, because it smells different. No kidding. So the great thing about having a coonhound is, I mean, all dogs can use their noses so much better than we can, but man, you've got the master of it all. You know, you got a coonhound. So put that nose to work, and I think you will have less shredded paper very soon.
Pam, thank you very much for calling. Patricia McConnell, Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist, our guest today. Always have fun when she comes by. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking cabin fever with your pets with our guest today, Patricia McConnell, Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in. And one open line at 800-642-1234. You can always email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, Sandy emailed that she and her husband have a version of Find It with their dog. When he takes him outside for the final potty of the evening, Sandy hides something somewhere inside the house. And when they come inside, her husband says, "Find Mom," and he searches until he finds her hiding somewhere and with a small treat.
Beautiful idea. That's just, I hope more people call in and give us their ideas, you know, for games that they play, because we're just such a creative species. And so that's a wonderful one. Jim's my husband, and we taught Willie to go find the other person. So I'd say, "Where's Jim?" And he'd run to Jim, and he'd say, "Where's Tricia?" And Willie would run to me. Although I have to tell you, talk about lesson learned. So I was sure that when I said, "Where's Jim?" that Willie knew what that meant. You know, it meant go find Jim. And then one day, Jim was sitting right beside us, and I thought, you know, I'll just see what happens. So I said, "Willie, where's Jim?" Willie ran to the window in the front room where he could see Jim pull up every time he came home from work. So what "where's Jim" meant was run to the window. We eventually taught an actual "where's Jim," but only because I was taught that, as is often the case, what I thought he knew was completely different than what he actually knew.
Well, let's take another call. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I'd like to take you up, Tricia, on your request for supplying some ideas. We have two cats. Like, we're not talking dogs here. We're talking cats. And we give them 3 greenies apiece each night. And this is a highlight of the day. And I used to give them to them out in the kitchen just a few feet apart, and they would end up just swallowing them whole because they kept their eye on the other one to make sure that their greenie wasn't taken, or maybe they could get an extra. And then one of them, Henry, started sitting up, and so I encouraged that, and now he's learned to sit, stay. And then when I lower my hand with a greenie, he sits up to take it. And the other one, Jasmine, loves to chase things. And so I throw her greenie out into the next room, and she tears off after it and hunts for it. And Henry is around a corner and sitting up, and so he's not. Now he chews his greenie, whereas he used to swallow it whole. And she chews it, so the dental treat is serving its purpose. And we turned claw clipping time into a very much looked forward to event. What I do is I have dried fish and or dried chicken, little cubes, and I use 6 cubes per cat, and my husband holds the cat. I give them a piece of chicken first, and then I clip the first paw, and then chicken, and I give them a treat after each paw, and then a double, and then on the end I give them a bonus treat. And they it's like, who gets to go first?
Well, you sound like a pretty smart gal, Stella.
Yeah, I think Stella should be your next guest, actually. I think Stella's doing a fantastic job. And there's so many things I love about that story, one of which is that Stella is paying attention to the different personalities of each cat. You know, I loved it when you said, Stella, that, you know, one cat loves to chase things. So I've got him chasing the treat. The little greenie, the little kitty greenies, which my cats love too, by the way, chasing the little kitty greenie while the other one is doing, you know, sit up and look adorable. And that avoids a problem. It gives them both something that they love to do. So that's just, again, that's just super creative, really fun. And yeah, I think she should be your next guest because I think she's.
Thank you, Stella.
She got it all figured out.
Oh, man. Well, let's see what's on Suzanne's mind from Madison. Hi, Suzanne.
Hello, my 3.5-year-old dog has poop in the house fever.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to figure out how to stop this. We got the dog when she was about 1.5. She had been in crate a lot. She just doesn't seem to understand going outside, and when we take her for a walk, she will pretty regularly poop. When we let her out in the morning, when it's proper timing for her, we let her out in the early morning, she poops right away. But a lot of mornings we get up and she poops in the house. And then sometimes she also pees in the house. I don't know how to get a signal from her. We let her out at night before bed. I don't get it. And the other dog that we have just is fine with all that. But she holds her poop and pee for long, long periods of time, many hours, many, many hours.
So, okay. First you have my sympathy because there's no matter how much we love dogs, we just don't love poop in the house. It's just what it is. Right. So, and with an older dog, it's frustrating. So you have my sympathy. Good news is that you can probably turn this around. The bad news is that it's going to be a certain amount of work. So when I had clients who had these problems, and I had a dog once who had this problem, basically, I want you to go back to treating this dog like it was a puppy that you just got. You now have an 8-9-week-old puppy, right? And you take the dog out as often as you can and you give it a treat outside. So is she still on the line, Larry? Can I ask? Oh, good. Good, good. When your dog does go outside, does she get reinforced for it in some way?
Well, if she goes to the bathroom, not a treat, but praise.
Okay. Praise. I would up the ante because praise is nice, but you know, it's obviously not enough, right? So I would up the ante. I would, every time you take her outside, you're going to have treats in your pocket. And I would try putting on a cue. I use go pee and hurry up. Hurry up is for poop. Hurry up, it's cold. I want to get inside. So so you go outside with her. And if she starts to go on her own, you know, you say whatever you want to say. Say hurry up. and then you whip a really nice piece of food. So it's not some dry kibble. It's like a little piece of dry chicken or something really wonderful that you know your dog absolutely adores. And so she's like, what happened? I just got a piece of chicken for doing something I do all the time. Maybe I can exploit this. And so what you want her to start thinking is like, oh, wow, I could train my human to give me that piece of chicken. If I poop outside, I'll figure this out. So you want to go outside. And every time your dog, and I would do both pee and poop. When your dog goes outside, for the inside part, you said sometimes it happens before you get up in the morning. Here's the worst news is if it was my dog, I would just start getting up earlier for hopefully just a few weeks and take the dog outside. And if she doesn't go, fine, you know, bring her back in, take her back outside in another 10 minutes. Again, you have an 8-week-old puppy. You're going to have a crummy 2 or 3 weeks. There's just no way around it. But basically, you want to give her every opportunity to go outside. And then for the inside pottying, everything you can do to clean up the area so that it doesn't smell like a bathroom is really important. So get some of the commercial deodorizers. It's really important. Soap and water actually is worse than nothing because it sets some of the nitrogen and makes it smell like ammonia, makes it smell like a bathroom. So figure out where she's going. If you can confine her to an area early in the morning so she's less likely to go, she has an area where she usually goes, then keep her out of that area. Do everything you can to clean up the inside so it doesn't smell like a bathroom. Take her outside proactively before she goes in the house. Reinforce the heck out of her for going outside. So those are the three things I do. So our paws are all crossed for you. And we're so glad your dog hasn't, your other dog isn't also doing it because that's a big risk. So that's the good news. So sorry for the bad news, but I do think this, you could probably turn this around if you really work at it for a bit of time.
And I'm not sure if you mentioned this, but I know I've heard you say that that reward, that treat should come right away.
Good. Yeah. Good point, Larry. Really, really important. So it's not, you don't stand at the door and let the dog out. And then when they come back to you, they get a treat. You go out with them. So don't just open the door and expect your dog to go outside. You go walk around with them. And then you're watching sort of the corner of your eye. Don't stare at them and make them nervous, but you're watching, you're observing, you're vigilant. And when they do go, as soon as they're done, it's good girl. And you are right there with a treat in that dog's mouth. So yeah, thanks, Larry. That's really important point.
There you go, Suzanne. Thank you so much for calling. Holly in Minneapolis. We'll go to you now. Hi, Holly.
Good morning. So happy to talk to both of you. So I've been doing lots of indoor stuff for a while, you know, between like puzzles and like, you know, a 2-liter soda bottle, put the kibble in that sort of stuff. And then in this time of COVID, been trying to add some tricks like you've talked about. And my dog does a great job of picking up on click and treat and starting new tricks, but she's so excitable about the reward that then it's hard to get duration.
Yeah.
You know, she'll get the first piece of thing, but she's like, so about where's that treat? Where is it? That then I can't get further. So we learn a lot of beginning steps of different things, but
got
I
it.
Want to
yeah.
Increase that.
Oh, that's a great question. And let's work through this. Let's, even though we're not there, I wish we could be, at least with a video, let's work through this. Let's pick an example of something you taught her that you got started on anyway, that then sort of fell apart because she couldn't control, couldn't contain herself. So what was one thing you tried to teach her that she got too excited to even think about?
So let's see. I have tried to do like different marks, you know, so she's good with going to her bed. She can go to her bed and stay in her bed. But I've tried to expand that by having like a different mark by using like a towel or a kerchief or something like that on the floor in different places. And she'll go and put her feet on it. But then it's just kind of like her body just is can't settle into it.
So you want her to go to Mark and stay here, right?
Well, yeah. Instead of just kind of like, where's the food now? Where's the food?
Raising through it. Yeah, no, I hear you. And I do have an idea for you. I would go backwards. You're going to sort of backwards chain this. So what you want your dog to do is to go to somewhere and then stay there, right? So do the stay there first. I would work on stay. Yeah, and I think so many dogs, even if you don't use it very much, I think teaching a dog to stay is a wonderful thing to do because it teaches them to control their exuberance and to control their emotions and that patience is a virtue. And, public schools, if I understand it correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, somebody out there who knows far more about this than I do, but part of the reason why public schools started were so people would be able to sort of sit in desks and stay in place. I think it began around the Industrial Revolution. Basically, it's teach people to just stay in one place and focus without sort of gibbering around. So I would teach just this dog, and I think all dogs profit from it, to just stay. So forget about the market first. So I would do... lie down, stay, use a really good clear hand signal, and then walk right back to your dog after half a second. They can't possibly fail, right? Set up stay sessions so your dogs can't fail. Lie down, stay, you walk right to your dog, you give them a treat, and then you back up, and then you make the release boring. So it's lie down, stay, good girl, while she's eating the treat, and then you move away a little bit, keep your hand out, and then you say, okay, like snore, like, okay. So the release is not the fun part. The release is the boring part. The fun part is when they're actually staying. And so you start with her staying for literally half a second. You're using a good, nice visual cue. And then gradually ask your dog to stay for longer and longer periods of time. But that includes lots and lots of treats. So if you are working your way up to 10 seconds, say you're on session 3, maybe, of stay training, that would be a reasonable thing to do. You're on session 3 of stay training. Dog's been doing pretty well. You're at 85% success. And you say, lie down, stay. You walk towards your dog. You give your dog a treat. You back up a little bit, hold your hand out, walk towards your dog, another treat, repeat, repeat, rinse and repeat. So I would give them 3 treats during this 10 seconds. So gradually you're going to do several different things, but nothing at the same time. You're going to increase the duration and you're going to decrease the number of treats, but don't do that at the same time. So when you increase the duration of the stay, you're going to keep up a pretty high level of reinforcement, pretty high frequency. When you're wanting to decrease the frequency, you're going to stay at relatively short periods of time. And you sort of mix and match that. So first teach a good stay. And then start putting the mark in, because it sounds like what she needs is a lot of emotional control, as we all do. Me included. To Jill, who is Larry's producer for this show, Jill and I were talking about how much we both love to bake bread. One of the things that I've been doing during COVID is doing a lot of cooking, but then there's that, problem with what does that lead to, which is eating. So I understand about emotional exuberance over food, very sympathetic. So again, start backwards, teach stay first. Every dog could profit from it because it teaches them patience, and then work up to your mark.
There you go. Good luck.
Thanks for posting all your bread baking too. Love to see your Instagram post.
All right. I will keep it up then. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Holly. Appreciate it. Well, let's take a call from Terry next in Appleton. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My daughter has had her dog Louie for about 5 years, and Louie was the only dog for a while, and then they got a male dog and another female dog, and they did fine for quite a while, and then my daughter is now pregnant. We don't know if this has anything to do with it, but Louie is now living with Grandpa and Grandma, in Appleton because Louie has such a jealousy problem with the other male dog. He doesn't have any problems with female dogs or cats or anything like that, but it's just they really go at it. So we have separated the dogs, but I'm wondering if there's anything we can do because I watch my grandson also, and I notice that he tries to get in the middle of everything with my grandson and I. So there's some jealousy going on.
Yeah, jealousy, you know, jealousy is an interesting emotion. There are some scientists who would argue that it's called a, quote, secondary emotion, meaning it's not one of the most basic, primitive, or primal emotions that all mammals share. And there are some people who argue that only humans can actually actively experience jealousy. I say...
Baloney?
Thank you. I was thinking of... words that I shouldn't say on the radio, and that stopped me for a moment. I say poo-poo to that. And have you ever had a dog? I don't think jealousy is primitive at all if you look at the physiology of it and actually what it is. I think jealousy is actually a form of frustration, which is sort of a form of anger if you think about it. So one, yes, dogs can be jealous without question. And as it happens with Terry and her dog, Louie, it can lead to some serious aggression problems. So a couple of, one other preface before we talk about what to do, which is that you are not the first person who has experienced a change in their dog's behavior when somebody was pregnant. I would love to see some research on this. I don't think there's ever been research on it. I had a number of clients whose dog's behavior changed radically when they became pregnant. And very often they became more aggressive in some way. So is it possible that after your daughter has her next child, that this behavior will get better? Maybe, don't know. Part of it, that would be nice. I don't think we should count on that, certainly. Can I ask, Terry, if you're still there, how old is Louie and how old is the other male?
Louie is 5 and the other male is 2. And they got along great until the pregnancy. So yeah. We thought that there was definitely a correlation, but, you know, I guess who knows?
Yeah, who knows if it's causal, right? And the other really important correlation is the age of the younger dog. You know, people talk about puppy privileges. A lot of older dogs give young dogs privileges that they do not allow once the other dog is older. So your other dog is 2. So you have a now almost adult, fully adult male dog who used to be a puppy, right? So it could be as importantly, if not exclusively, because of the fact that this other dog is becoming older and now is an adult and is now seen as a threat to Louie. So I would, for issues related to serious aggression, I always suggest that you work with a behaviorist. Hopefully somebody could at least do a phone consult, if not a home visit. I know people at Dog's Best Friend, my former business, often meet with people outside, even in winter, just depends on the weather, and sort of get to meet the dog. You know, first do a phone consult and then go out, meet the dog, maybe see the dogs interact outside so you can get some sense of what's going on. There are things you can do to teach dogs to be less jealous, which basically is conditioning them. If, for example, say you're sitting on a couch and Louie is sitting beside you and another dog comes up, rather than thinking, oh no, I'll just make a name up for the other dog. It's called Bob. So, oh no, here comes Bob. Oh no, I better growl to keep him away from my human. What I want Louie to think is, oh boy, here comes Bob, because whenever I'm by my human and Bob comes over, I get something wonderful. So under very controlled conditions, which is why I want you to try and work with a trainer or a behaviorist, under very controlled conditions, making safety first, I want Louie to learn when Bob comes up, I don't lose anything. I gain something. I not only don't lose my human, but I get something wonderful. I get more petting. I get a favorite treat. I get a favorite toy. Something wonderful happens. So I'm no longer feeling defensive and needing to guard sort of special treasured resource. So I hope that makes sense. I'm really glad you're managing it now, because I think that's really important. So good that you're managing it. But again, if you have Louie and you're also taking care of a grandchild and that's becoming an issue, then I think you'd be really smart to reach out to somebody. It would be a great idea.
Yeah, I think so too. Good luck, Terry. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Patricia McConnell, Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your pet's behavior. Does it have cabin fever? What can you do about it? Patricia McConnell, our guest today, Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist. She has a number of books, The Other End of the Leash, For the Love of a Dog, The Education of Will, A Mutual Memoir of a Woman and Her Dog, and a number of training books, other training books as well. And so it's always great to have her come by. We're old friends. We've been doing this for a long time together, and it's great to have her. I'm excited and happy every time she comes by. Anyway, questions for her. Lots of callers online right now, so we'll just go back to the phones and to Lynn in Appleton. Lynn, hello.
Hi. I have an old dog who is a lump. He is 11, almost 12. Maybe he is 12. I'm not entirely sure. He's an Alaskan Husky. He was a sled dog. But now he has degenerative neuropathy, and he's visibly deteriorating now. So he lies around a lot. He sleeps. He does still love his walks and the occasional trip to the dog park, except he's not really another dog person. He's kind of a loner, so he doesn't really play when he goes there. He just sniffs around a lot, but I like to get him out of the house. He's not food motivated, so I got him one of those little foraging toys, and he couldn't care less. So I was wondering what I can do to stimulate him and exercise him at his advanced age without tiring him or hurting him.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear about all his health problems. But, you know, for a tired sled dog to make it to 11 or 12 just at all, that size and breed of a dog. So you're doing great. So that's wonderful. And you know what I was thinking about while you were talking is, rather than, you know, given that he's not treat oriented, I just wonder if a great thing to learn to do would be to learn more about doing canine massage. I think that might improve his quality of life as much as just about anything in the world. You can go online. I'm not an expert on it, but there are things to know. You know, it's not just rubbing, you know, patting their head or rubbing their belly. I would go online and just go to school on doing a good canine massage and start practicing on him. He will tell you what's working. I was at events on Vashon Island, actually, off the coast of Seattle, and there was a canine masseuse there, and she was giving massages out, and I watched dog after dog after dog just go into complete and utter bliss. So if that was my dog, that's what I do. I would become a masseuse for my dog, and I think that would improve your dog's quality of life more than anything else I can think of.
And it would probably make you feel pretty good too. That's wonderful advice. I love that advice. Thank you, Lynn, and good luck. Get online to find out a little more. Appreciate your call. Nancy in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I just have a quick question. I was wondering if you have any other resources for training cats to do fun things. I've done a few things with my cats at home. but I guess I would like to know what resources you might recommend.
Oh, that is such a good question. You know, the whole dog cat training thing, if I can just start a little bit in a generalized fashion, is fascinating. The company I mention often called Dogwise, they're in Washington State. They actually distribute my books. You can buy them on my website or from Amazon or from them, but they distribute them. They actually started as a company that sold both dog and cat books. And after several years, they had a business consultant come in and looked at, you know, the business model and basically said, you are losing money distributing books on cat training because nobody buys them. And there is a huge dearth of books on training cats. And I am truly humiliated to say, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I know they've got to be out there. I can't quick jump online because, you know, I'm online. I don't have two computers at my side right now. So that's what I want to do, is go online and find a book on cat training. But I will also say, beyond that, the general basic principles of training are cross species. Do everything you can to learn how to use positive reinforcement. I mean, I had this heavenly, magical week several years ago in Florida, at a place that trains free-flying raptor exhibits. So they literally let these raptors go free, right? Completely free in space and fly around and thrill and educate the zoo goers or the park goers, and then fly right back into their cages and then go back to where they live. So I got to train a scarlet macaw and a crow hybrid as a way of learning how to just get better at basic learning principles. So the basic principles of positive reinforcement, whether it's for dogs or cats or parrots or birds or ferrets or your spouse, are all exactly the same. So don't let species worry you so much. You know, you can look at dog training videos and do the same thing with your cat. The trick with cats is to figure out, the trick with every animal is to figure out what reinforces them. Dogs are unbelievably easy. There are professional trainers who argue that basically just working with dogs will destroy you as a trainer, because dogs are so easy to train that you can be pretty bad at it and still get really good results. I remember training this crow hybrid, and we were in small groups, and we had a trainer with us. And so he was always advising us, and we started laughing about the fact that he was always going like, now, faster, now, you were late, you missed it, you were late, now, hurry, faster, faster. No, we talked about crow speed, because basically they learned everything. It was like they do a behavior, and if we didn't reinforce it within a tenth of a second, it was like over. So our timing got way, way, way better. But the trick with the crow, again, as every species, is what did they really want? And so maybe they wanted a mealworm. It was something we could give them fast. So with cats, you need to figure out what your cat wants, whether it's food or play. Mm. Be careful with petting with cats, because most cats love petting up to a certain extent, and then they're done. Now, again, most cats, you know, every cat out there is going to prove me wrong right now. But it's easier to give a cat a food treat. So you have something they really, really love in tiny, tiny pieces that you can give them instantly and fast. So with cats, the trick is speed and being sure that you have something they really want and not doing it too long. Cats tend to, in my experience, cats get bored faster than a lot of dogs do. So keep your training sessions really short.
And if you haven't given your cat greenies ever...
yeah.
Tiger would one of my cats Tiger would do anything for a greenie, and on the other hand, Coco, the other cat, doesn't really care that much, could probably care less. But Tiger loves greenies.
They're all different. And greenies, I also have them. My cats adore them. I will say they're not great for training because they're, you know, even the cat ones, they're too big. You know, you don't want something that your cat can like chew on for 5 seconds. You want something that they just swallow instantly. But I actually call cat greenies the cocaine of the cat world. So many, and of the dog world, the dog version. I mean, I don't know exactly what's in there, but oh, you know, yeah, it's compelling.
There you go.
Not a great training treat, but it's a great way to get your dog's attention.
Nancy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Patricia McConnell, our guest today, certified applied animal behaviorist. It's always fun to have her come by, and she's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. So I hope you will hang in there with us because we are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Patricia. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patricia McConnell, back with us, a certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker and author. Great to have her come by to talk about your pet's behavior and love to hear from you at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Patricia, we have Kathy and Madison on the phone, so let's go there. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Tricia, it's wonderful to hear your voice. 20 years ago, I took my dog, Isabel, Portuguese water dog, to your advanced graduate seminar on your farm, and it was just incredible fun. So
I remember Isabel. Oh, how could I forget
you
Isabel?
Do? She was fun. So much. Oh, my goodness. Oh, that just, well, that warms my heart. Thank you. She was a lovely, lovely dog. So now I have a new one in my home. Her name is Sienna Rose, and she is a rescue from Houston and nearly croaked with today's snowfall, but that's another story. That's not why I'm calling. I've had her for about 4 months now, and what I have observed is that she has become more barky over time. So I live in a neighborhood that has a lot of dogs and a lot of people who walk, and she has taken to barking at absolutely everything that goes by the house. Mm. And I'm having a hard time getting her, she gets overstimulated, and I'm having a hard time getting her to calm down.
You know, parenthetically, just a comment. I have a friend with a couple of friends who have rescued dogs, and they both cases they were quiet for quite a while until they got used to the family, I think, and then became barking. I wonder, Patricia, could that be an actual thing?
It's a thing. It is absolutely a thing. And I love that you. I love that you mentioned that, Larry, because that's just about where I was going to go is, and I love the specific examples of two of your friends. It's really common for dogs when they first come into a new environment to be relatively quiet. And then as they get more comfortable and feel more like they're at home or on territory to start getting barky. And so it's almost like they're in a state of sort of mild shock when they switch environments. You know, they don't know where they're going. They don't know why they're going. I mean, you know, sometimes it is useful to be anthropomorphic. It's not always bad. So just imagine all of a sudden you are whisked from your home for and you had no idea what was going to happen, and then all of a sudden you were taken somewhere else, and there you are, and you're just in a sort of a state of shock. And so they tend to often be quite quiet in the beginning. I've had, I can't tell you how many clients I had who said he was the quietest dog at the shelter, and we hate barking, that's why we got him. And then you know what happened next, right? We got over the shock of being in the shelter and got really barky. So one, it's a really common problem. But usually that kind of barking is still a dog is he's nervous or defensive, just not sort of numb from shock. So usually it's often motivated by some kind of fear, defensiveness. So I have a booklet called Cautious Canine about dogs who are afraid of other dogs or strangers, people. That might be really useful for you. What I would do, I would work on prevention, and then I would work on teaching the response that you do want. So prevention first. If you're in a neighborhood that's really busy, it sounds like you are, and the dog, is it Vanna Rose? What Rose? What's
like
your dog's name?
Oh, she's kind of breaking up, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So we'll just call your dog Rose. So if Rose can see people walking by and dogs walking by, if at all possible, I strongly suggest that you prevent that. So you get drapes, you get, I have a dog, my new border collie, who's, I've had a year now. So can I call him new still? I don't know. It's all relative, right? But he's obsessed with the cat. And so he will sit and drool at the window looking at the cat outside. So I actually got a gate, one of those great little child gates between the kitchen and the dining room, so he can't sit and stare at the window. So do whatever you need to do to prevent your dog getting aroused inside. A lot of dogs are very overstimulated, being in homes where they can see out windows, and they're constantly being stimulated. They're seeing people walk by, dogs walk by, things happening, noises happening, squirrels playing, and they get all aroused, and so they have nothing to do with all that arousal. So damp that down just logistically as best you can. So that's one thing to do. The other thing I would do is I would start teaching your dog using positive reinforcement to look at you every time he sees another dog or sees another person, whatever he's barking at, while you're out on walks. And it's tricky for you because there's so many people and dogs in your neighborhood. But think about the schedule, about when can you take your dog out when it's relatively quiet, and start. So go out on walks when it's quietest, if you possibly can. I would, being proactive, I would teach him watch or look at me, a cue that means move your head and look right at my face. I would do that in the absence of any distraction at all. So in a quiet room, he can't see out a window, nothing's happening. I would teach him to say, you could say, look. And you say, look. And sometimes if you just say, look, your dog is like, what? I haven't heard that. Use a word like that with that tone of voice before. They look at your face, you instantly click with a clicker, or you say, good, and you give them a treat. Look, good, treat. Look, good, treat. And if they don't look, you might go or move, do something to get them to look at you. The more they do it voluntarily, the better. So you get that established with no distractions. Then start doing it with distractions, not a dog right, 10 feet away from him, but something very far away, something that's not very distracting. You've got great treats you're giving your dog for looking at you. So you start gradually getting them to look at you when they're just mildly distracted. And then eventually over the weeks and the months, moderately distracted. And then eventually you're going to be able to have your dog look at you without you saying, look. That's the goal, is you don't have to say, look. But they learn, if there's a dog walking towards me and I look at my mom, something really good happens. Eventually, you won't have to use a treat anymore. That's full graduation, right? But that's going to be a year from now, probably, frankly. So work on that. I would also work on trying to keep your dog really mentally busy so the dog's general arousal level is a little bit less. Lots of tricks, lots of games, lots of learning new things. So Rose gets lots of mental exercise. So good luck, Kathy. You had such a wonderful dog. I remember Isabel so well. So you got more work cut out for you this time, but you're up to it. I'm sure you are.
Thank you for calling, Kathy. And Katie in Janesville, it's your turn. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
While I was online listening, I love the stories about the cats. Our household has three cats and three dogs. And the cats have all the humans well and truly trained. They go to the door, they meow, the humans open the doors. So our cats are well trained. The dogs, I have three. The little one is a Jag Terrier Jack Russell mix. The big one is a Mastiff. And then my middle child is a German Shorthair. His name is Gunn. He's about 8 years old. We got him as a three-year-old from a kennel. Basically, he was a failed hunting dog. He does come with his own set of very unique behaviors. He's very, very shy. We've managed to bring him out of his shell. He loves his family, but anybody else coming around, he has a cave and he goes and hides. But the behavior that is starting to really concern me is that if we're sitting on the couch just watching TV and just kind of lazing around, all of a sudden he'll get real agitated, and he'll go over, he'll start chewing on the wood nightstand. He'll start chewing on my windowsills, which have lead paint underneath the paint. He'll go and he'll chew the drywall. He's actually chewed a hole right through the drywall now, so I have snow coming in. That's the behavior I'm worried about. And if we're gone, he does have separation anxiety. He seems to do okay, though, with the other two dogs. They kind of keep that down. And I have people going in and out of the house all the time, so the separation stuff doesn't come in that often. But when it does, yeah, he'll tear things apart. But when we're sitting there and he eats the drywall.
Okay, wow. Well, that, I sure see your concern here. Yeah, that is a tricky one that obviously I too would be highly motivated to figure out. So the first thing I would do is I would try and figure out, if you can, and you may not be able to, but if you can figure out what the trigger is, I would start taking notes. I would, you know, what is happening? What time of day? When did he eat? What is happening? You know, did something come on TV? Did an electrical appliance come on? One of the things we often tend not to think about is how many noises there are in our home, many of which we can't hear that our dogs can. So sometimes that's a hidden trigger for dogs to exhibit some kind of nervous or agitated behavior. So that's something to think about. Anyway, so try and figure out what the trigger is if you possibly can. So while you're doing that, when he does it, I would call him back to you. If he won't come, I would very gently, because he's a shy dog who sounds like he's, you know, a pretty soft, sensitive guy. So I would go to him. If you have to put a leash on him, go ahead, put a leash on him. If he's food motivated, that would be great. Be sure you're using the best of all possible food. I'm teaching Maggie to give me her paw and let it sit in my hand while I use a Dremel grinder tool on her nails. I gave her steak last night in my first training session. Yeah, because she's like, oh, I don't know. I'm so... When I got her, she was terrified of having her nails trimmed in any way. So I went right to the big guns. So go to the big guns for Gun. And I would bring him back to me and I would do what I could to try and soothe him, either by long, continuous petting. Good boy. You know, long, continuous petting, not pat, 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 pat. Long, continuous petting. Or give him something else to do. Teach him a trick. You know, give him something to do. My favorite trick for nervous dogs is to teach a bow, because when they bow, they're stretching and it relaxes them. So when I had, what a lot of people know about Willie, who I wrote Education of Will about in part, he was very nervous about other dogs when he was young. And so I taught him to bow on cue, and I found that it's a phenomenal way to help relax him, because it sort of, well, it relaxes him. It stretches his body. And he actually learned to do it himself. I could see him do it as a way of sort of shaking off nervousness. So, and a shake off is another way dogs actually, when they shake like that after they've had some kind of interaction. So think about teaching some tricks that help relax him and shake off some of that excess energy. And the last thing I would say is, I can't help but want to send you also to a veterinary behaviorist, because this is something that possibly could be a medical issue. So go to the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association. They have a section on veterinary behaviorists, and see if you get if you don't have luck with some of the things I tried, maybe you can call in a behaviorist or a trainer like me who would come help you. And if you don't have any luck, then I would definitely make contact with a veterinary behaviorist. You could do a phone consult. They can work with your vet if they need to do any tests, because maybe there's something else going on. So yeah, that's a start for you anyway.
Good luck, Katie. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I wanted to bring in an email, and we're talking about learning tricks and so forth as well on the show. And Diane emailed, they have their dog a Schnauzer mix. They taught him to number his feet, 1, 2, et cetera. It started as a way to clean paws in muddy weather, and now works for trimming nails too. He seems to like the game. He has progressed from front right, front left, etc. Now presents foot for the number that is requested.
Oh, that is too perfect. I love that. That is fantastic. Number one, number two, number three. That is just too good. Thank you so much for letting us know. That's just inspiring, isn't it?
It is indeed. Bob wondered if you had any experience using sign language with an owner of or dog who has hearing impairments.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know American Sign Language. That's a beautiful, elaborate language unto itself. But dogs are highly visual. I mean, yes, they use their noses and they're brilliant at scent, and it's very important in their world. But like us primates, they also get a tremendous amount of information, especially socially, through visual cues. So that's just trivial. I mean, most dogs are actually watching people when they're training them. And, you know, people will say sit and we think that our dog sits because of the word that we just said. 80% of the time, I made that number up, by the way, Larry. So big percentage of the time, I guarantee you, your dog is actually watching what you do. And most of us move our bodies in some way or give a visual signal that we're not even conscious of that our dog is actually cueing on. So you absolutely can use a fast, fast repertoire of visual signals to train your partially deaf dog. It's a great idea. It's a great thing for any of us to do anyway. I've actually done interviews lately where I had somebody by my side and I use visual signals to like call Maggie to come to me, tell her to lie down, tell her to stay there, tell her to go over there or something while I was talking so I wasn't interrupting things. So anybody can do it, but for a partially deaf dog, wonderful. Great thing to do.
Rosemary in Cleveland has a question for you. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi, yeah, it's Cloverland, Wisconsin.
I was going to say Cleveland.
Cleveland, sorry.
Cool. I know, yeah. I wish I was somewhere else. Well, anyway, I have a 7-year-old cat, a little black cat, and she was a stray for about a year before she came to us. So we've had her about 7 years, and we are having trouble putting her, like, in a carrier. My daughter just had a baby, so we were going to travel to just, you know, it's not too far, just to go and visit or help her with the baby. And she just, as soon as she sees, and it's a big box that we put her in. It's not a normal little cat carrier. It's a dog carrier.
Okay.
And she's, as soon as she sees it, she runs. Like, I haven't seen her for 2 days. She comes out at night to eat.
Oh, no.
When she sees it, she just, you know, we're going somewhere. Or if she sees a suitcase somewhere or a backpack, it's like, we're going somewhere. And she runs. And she disappears.
Poor baby. And that is, I mean, a lot of people have that experience with their pets, but that's extreme. Here's what I would do. I would get a new carrier. And it sounds, that might be problematic if, you know, just a suitcase makes her run away. But basically, maybe you should start with a suitcase. I want you to put something out that she's never seen before, that she has no association with, and put it out wide open in a room, and then put great food in it. And never try and get her in it. Just maybe you could sprinkle the food around it. But gradually, over a period of days and weeks, she's just going to get used to having it being in the room, and then going into it without it being closed to get some great food. And then gradually, slowly over time, and she sounds so fearful, I cannot stress enough how slowly, maybe a year, you gradually start to ask her to go in when you just close it up a little tiny bit. I actually had a cat who had a horrific experience at a vet clinic. And whenever I put her in her cat care, she would void her bladder. She would just involuntarily pee in terror. So I never use it anymore. I bought her a new one, completely different fabric, you know, completely different materials, completely different structure. She goes in it from the top, not the side. And she's fine. She's absolutely fine. So do not use the one she's conditioned to be afraid of. Try something new and go really, really slowly.
There you go. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. And Matt in Wausau emailed to say his 25-pound terrier, like a rat terrier, has started to stare at the food cabinet an hour and a half before mealtime. He barks and jumps up and down when fed and eats his food really fast. They put an upside-down bowl in his dish to slow a little bit. He's a healthy weight. They just don't understand why he's doing this.
I do.
In a minute, can you tell me why?
Yes, because if I was left my own devices, I would sit and stare at the cabinet with chocolate in it. So I totally understand. Sounds a little obsessive, but also understandable. You know, I'm just waiting for that food to come out. So a couple of things. I would just train a different behavior. This is a perfect case of think of what you do want your dog to do and use food to train it. So that's really quick. Don't punish it. Just train. Just what do we want our dog to be doing right now? Train it using food, and you'll be done. Easy peasy.
on that note, we are out of time. Patricia, it's always such a great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. And what's your site? Give us your site that people can go to.
Oh, sure. People can go to my website. Just go to my name, patriciamcconnell.com. On that site, you can also go to my blog. And again, I have videos of my first work with Dremel training with both Maggie and Skip on the other end of the leash. That's my blog. And I'm on Instagram and Facebook. So I'm out there. I'm out as best I can be.
You are. And thank you again. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thanks, Patricia.
It's my pleasure, Larry.
Patricia McConnell, Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist. Take a look. Go to her site and take a look. She's got a lot there. Tomorrow at 11, we'll talk about current wetlands legislation and the upcoming Wetland Science Conference. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mealer.